Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. How are you? How's December going for you so far? Because I'm recording this in December, of course, which is why I just said that. It's the middle of December as I record this now. So how's December for you? How is it for you, or how was it for you if you're listening to this in a month after, or any other month than December? How's it going? December can be a weird month, I think. It's pretty much the middle of winter, and if you celebrate Christmas, then December becomes a bit stressful because the Christmas holiday's coming, and you have to make sure you've got presents for everyone, and you have to sort out your travel plans and work out how much time you are willing or able to spend with your different family members, and it all gets a bit stressful. And of course, everyone else is going through the same thing. So generally, people seem a bit stressed out at this time of year. If you're late with your Christmas shopping, then that becomes a mad rush, and the shops are full of desperate people, like in that film with Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, the one where he's a desperate parent trying to find a certain present for his son or something. Not the Terminator, not that one. No, that's not a Christmas movie, is it? I don't think so. You know, the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger where he's like, "Aah!" Which it's pretty much every film, isn't it? Any Arnold Schwarzenegger film has him going at some point. But anyway, the one I'm referring to is it called Jingle All the Way? Something like that. It's probably got a different title where you are. But anyway, imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger with that face. That face that he does when he makes that noise. Imagine him in a big department store trying to find toys and presents. It gets a bit like that, doesn't it? Plus, work commitments seem a bit heavy, because everyone's trying to get things done before the Christmas break, and so things get a bit much. I hope that you're doing okay out there in podcast land. And some of you are going, yeah, it's fine, it's great. Everything's peaceful and calm. No worries at all. I don't know. It depends on, you know, if you're a parent and that sort of thing, doesn't it? Anyway, it's certainly true here for me that things are getting a bit much, because as you know, because I've been banging on about it since the summer, we are moving house, we're moving to a new flat, and we're having work done on the new place, and that's making things so much more complicated. Can't wait to move in, can't wait to be installed, but the moving is, you know how it is if you've ever moved house or flat. So, actually, I think this might be the last episode of the year, but I'm not sure. I have a couple of other episodes in the pipeline. There were other episodes I planned to record and upload. I wanted to do a special Christmas episode, but time is running out very quickly. So this might be the final episode of Luke's English Podcast for 2021. So Merry Christmas, everyone, if you celebrate Christmas, of course. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, I will just say season's greetings. If you don't get more podcasts from me after this until January sometime, then you can just imagine that I've had to pack up all my podcast gear, switched off the internet, and moved all our stuff to a new flat, which will probably be full of boxes and maybe no internet connection. And meanwhile, I'll be at my parents' place in England. I mean, meanwhile, while all the stuff is just in boxes in my flat, my family and me will be at my parents' place in England, COVID permitting, just doing the usual Christmas things. And the podcast will return in January, probably, but we will see. I might be able to upload more before the new year. It depends. But in any case, there's no guaranteeing that. So I will say season's greetings and Happy New Year to you now. All right? Season's greetings and Happy New Year. Anyway, let me talk about this episode then. This is episode what? 750? Oh God, 750 what? 754? 754, I expect. And it's the title of this one is something like this: Learning and Teaching English in the Metaverse / The Mandalorian with Andy Johnson. So there are two topics here: the Metaverse and The Mandalorian. And this is just one single audio episode with this introduction, but the video version, which you will find on YouTube, is in two parts. One which is just our chat about the Metaverse, and another one which is just our chat about the Mandalorian. And you don't get this wonderful introduction or the rambling I will do at the end, because that's only for the hardcore audio lepsters. I say hardcore, there's actually many more of you in the audioverse. In audio land than in video land. Anyway, so there are video versions, two separate videos for this on YouTube. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Smash that like button, etc. In this audio version, let's start with the Metaverse then. Andy is going to explain this himself, but to be clear, the Metaverse, or maybe a Metaverse, because there is more than one at the moment, is essentially... So, all right, what's a metaverse, Luke? Well, yeah, Andy's going to explain this, but essentially it's a 3D open world online, a metaphysical space which exists on the internet where people can go and interact and do all sorts of things. It's a bit like a primitive version of The Matrix from the film The Matrix, but the graphics aren't as good yet, and it's not quite as scary and evil yet. Yet, I hope it doesn't become like The Matrix, but, you know, you get the idea. As these sorts of open online worlds become more and more sophisticated, and as we learn how to use them, we'll probably find ourselves operating within them more and more for various things, especially for creating virtual workspaces for people working from home or people working from different locations but part of a team. Currently, we use things like Zoom calls with breakout rooms and screen sharing, and we use things like Microsoft Teams and other platforms. But eventually, probably, these shared online spaces will become more immersive, opening up so many possibilities for teamwork, which perhaps are more natural and intuitive because they simulate the real world more directly, but with so much more control. So we're talking about 3D environments in which an avatar of you, you know what, an avatar, like in the movie Avatar, but not all blue and weird. So 3D environments in which you can move anywhere and manipulate the environment and talk to people, and so on. So these metaverses can seem a little bit scary when you consider the frightening visions of this kind of thing that we've had from films like The Matrix. But on the other hand, they should allow us to work, collaborate, and also play together in more productive and enjoyable ways than the current methods we have. Because Zoom calls... Right? You know what I mean. Of course, many people are already using these online worlds, especially for gaming. There's a lot to discuss regarding these sorts of new online spaces. And I say new, but they're really not that new. Remember Second Life, the immersive 3D online world? And of course, there are all the online multiplayer games that people play, including things like GTA Online, those sandbox games where you can kind of go anywhere and do anything as long as it involves, you know, stealing cars and shooting people. But the metaverse has been around for years in various forms, so there's a lot to discuss here in terms of what the metaverse is, how it could be used, and the philosophical ramifications of it all. But what Andy and I are going to focus on in this conversation is how the metaverse could be used as an environment in which to learn and teach English, and what the advantages of that could be. So that's the main focus of our chat, really. Most of our chat is about that. Then after that, we have a chat about the Star Wars TV series, The Mandalorian. This is quite long overdue on this podcast, as I wanted to talk about it in an episode or two at the start of 2021, when The Mandalorian Season 2 was first streamed on Disney+, and it was all fresh in people's minds. So I did want to talk about it about a year ago, and quite a few listeners got in touch to ask me to share my thoughts on it on the podcast. So finally, here we go. There's about 25 minutes of chat about The Mandalorian, including spoilers for the end of season two. Now, I know that not everyone is a Star Wars fan, which is totally fine, of course, so it might not be for all of you, but it's at the end of this conversation, so hopefully the Star Wars fans will be happy to hear us discuss it, quite briefly, I must say. And the non-Star Wars fans can feel free just to take it or leave it, basically. In any case, keep listening if you want to hear me talking about The Mandalorian on the podcast, finally. We're nearly ready to start, but I think I should also add something about the lexicology of the word meta, since we're talking about the metaverse here, and meta is a word that's trending at the moment, meta this, meta that, and so on. So I would say that metaverse is something of a portmanteau word. A portmanteau word, that's a word that's been made by joining two other words together. So metaverse is something of a portmanteau word because it's a bit like a new word which has been made by sticking together two other words, in this case meta and universe, right? Metaverse. The verse part in metaverse is from universe, of course, and also, multiverse. Is a trending word at the moment because of the new Spider-Man film and the upcoming Doctor Strange film, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So multiverse, another sort of portmanteau word with the word verse in it from universe. Multiverse means a system of many interconnected universes or parallel worlds. And I think now in phase four of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we have many different alternate realities all converging, which should be entertaining and quite confusing as well, probably. But multiverse is not the word we're dealing with here. That's another episode for another time. I just wanted to mention multiverse because it's another portmanteau word with verse in it, meaning universe. But let's just refocus on metaverse then. So we know what the verse part of that means, universe, but what about meta? Now this word or prefix is currently being used more than ever. You probably saw the recent news that Facebook changed its name to Meta, although the social network that we log on to and stuff will still be called Facebook as far as I know. The company behind it though will be called Meta. So what is the word meta? Is it even a word or is it just a prefix? Let's see. So the word or prefix meta comes from ancient Greek and essentially means beyond or about. Okay? Beyond or about. There are many uses of the word. In some cases, it's an adjective, like when people say, well, that's so meta. But they might say it in that kind of voice. Yeah, it's very meta, isn't it? And in some cases, it's a prefix to a noun, like in metaphysical or metaverse. Essentially, meta refers to going beyond something or going outside something and then becoming self-aware or looking back at the thing that you've gone outside and looking objectively looking at it, becoming self-aware. In the case of the metaverse, which is a metaphysical online universe, this means going beyond the normal physical limitations of the real world and entering a world which is somehow outside that reality, a world, like the Matrix, which is free from the limitations of the real world. So that's an example of when meta means beyond, right? Sometimes, though, meta means about. And for me, this is like going outside of something and then looking back at the thing that you've transcended and kind of commenting on it, talking about it, and so on. Okay. For example, a film might be described as meta when the film becomes self-aware and starts commenting on the medium of film itself. This is quite hard to explain. Let's just say this. The TV series Friends was not very meta, I think. The characters lived in their world and they lived their lives, and there was never a sense that they knew that they were living in a fictional made-up place. But if at any point the characters in the film started commenting on their world, but from a sort of outside view, then that would be meta. For example, if Chandler and Joey started commenting on how their apartment building wasn't real or that they lived inside a TV show, Or if Rachel said something like, "So I'm a waitress, but how can I afford to live in this nice big apartment in Manhattan?" Huh? Maybe even looking at the camera while doing it, then that would definitely be quite meta. If the show started to realise it was just a show, and in fact was commenting on that, then the show would be outside of itself and commenting on itself, self-aware. So then you'd say, "Wow, Friends is really meta, isn't it?" "Yeah, I've just noticed that, Friends is actually really meta." Said no one ever, because it's not. Unlike something like The Simpsons, which is certainly quite meta, because it seems that The Simpsons knows it's a TV show, right? It's constantly breaking the sort of conventions of a normal TV show and showing the audience that, hey, we know that we're a TV show. Does that make sense? Of course it does. So anyway, that's meta, the adjective, meaning self-referential or self-aware, the about part of that old Greek meaning. Here's another example of meta that refers to learning English. In learning English, we talk about metacognitive strategies. These are ways of thinking about how you learn and the way you think about learning. You could go outside of your normal learning behavior. You go outside of your normal learning behavior, observe it, consider it, and think about it, perhaps creating new ways to think about and approach your learning habits. For example, many of the things that Bahar from Iran talked about in her episode of the Whisperlep competition this year. These were metacognitive strategies. Her first approach to learning English didn't work, she said. So she actually stepped out of her position, reconsidered her whole approach, and created other ways of thinking and learning, and the results worked well. She applied some metacognitive strategies to her learning of English. Meta can also be a noun, especially in gaming. People talk about a meta while gaming, as far as I'm aware. I'm not completely sure about this because I'm not really a gamer, but as far as I can tell, a meta is the best strategy to use in order to win a game. So this is like another definition or maybe another use of the word meta. Now, I've only read that, okay? I've just read about that. And I've also read that meta in gaming could be an acronym. The acronym being Most Effective Tactics Available, M-E-T-A, meta. All right. That's a bit specific and maybe only for the elite gamers out there. But there are also other uses of the word meta too. They're very specific and they relate to things like different mathematical and scientific systems. But I think that's probably enough about the word or prefix meta at this stage. Let's now go back to the metaverse again and consider how immersive 3D online worlds can help us to learn and teach English. That's the main aim for this conversation, with a bit of Mandalorian Star Wars chat tacked on at the end. You're probably fully primed now for some metaverse and Mandalorian chat, aren't you? And they're like, "Come on, bring it on, let's get in the metaverse. Come on, Luke." You're probably totally ready for it, but of course there is about 10 minutes of general chat and catching up with Andy before we get into the topic properly. That's just the way things are done on Luke's English Podcast, okay? This is the way. Okay, so now that you're prepared for the episode, let's get started, and here we go right now. Hello, Andy. How are you today?
I'm good, Luke. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Nice to actually have you on video for a change. It's rather than just audio.
I know, it's scary.
Another video call. How many video calls have you done in the last?
Oh my gosh.
2 years.
So many. I'm so over it. and I don't know about you, but when you're on a video call, where do you look? Where do you look? Because it's so difficult not to look at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and look at the person who's speaking, but when I'm the one that's speaking, where do I look? You know, do I look at you? Do I look at myself? Do I look at the camera? It all gets a bit weird.
It is weird, isn't it? And when you're recording like a video episode like this, also I'm thinking about where do I look, because obviously I'm looking at you right now, but for the video viewers, I'm looking over here and, you know, I should probably be looking here.
Should be looking at the camera, yeah.
Right. And then sometimes when I'm doing video, I have some notes on the screen. So I'm talking to the audience, but I also have to read the notes. So it's kind of like, where am I looking? Yeah, it all gets a bit confusing.
I did a whole thing. I wrote a whole blog post about this, about how you should be able to switch your camera off and there should be no pressure to have your camera on calls. I mean, I appreciate for this that it makes sense, because if you had your camera on and I had my camera off, that would just look really weird. But I mean, I had a call like back in the summer, and we were talking about quite high level stuff at work, and it was in the morning, and it was, I think we were homeschooling at the time, and my kids hadn't got dressed yet, and I heard one of them coming upstairs, and I knew that he would arrive in this room naked, because that's his thing, you know. He's 3 years old, or 3 years old at the time. And so, you know, he just spends half his time without any clothes on. So I just switched my camera off, because I didn't, you know, it's just not appropriate for my colleagues to see my son wandering around in the buff. And, you know, and after a couple of minutes, like, one of the people's like, oh, can you put your camera on? We need to see you, because what we're discussing is really important. And I was like, no, I can't. I can't do that. And it just, I remember it annoyed me quite a lot. You know, why do you have to have the camera on for you to understand that I'm listening and engaged and all those kinds of things? I just thought it's unnecessary. So, yeah, I'm leading the charge. I think we should be able to switch our cameras off if we like, if we're going to be working virtually like this.
You didn't want to have to say, well, I would put my camera on, I'm fine with that, but my 3-year-old has just come in and he's naked, so I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And because it's that thing, isn't it? When you're working from home, you're still doing the same job and you're still being as professional as you were before. And if you're in a board meeting or if you're in a meeting at work, you wouldn't say, oh, let me show you a picture of my son running around without his clothes on. You wouldn't even bring up your kids. So it's whether you need to say stuff. It's whether you need to explain why you're switching your camera off, or whether you should just be able to choose as and when you flip out or come back on again. So, I mean, in the end, I said, look, it's just not a good time because my son's in the room. But I just felt this is unnecessary. This shouldn't be an expectation, I don't think, that you are always visible in meetings.
Yeah, it's complicated, isn't it? It is complicated because you don't want to also have to explain, because in a business meeting, time is very important. And, you've got to be very kind of careful with the amount of time you spend talking about other things. Mm. So you don't want to have to go, I'm not putting my camera on because of X, Y, and Z. And it's just fraught with all sorts of complications.
Yeah.
But anyway, welcome back onto the podcast, Andy.
Thank you. Thank you, Luke. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been ages. Do you know how long it's been? Do you know the last time you were on this podcast? Now, listeners, sort of more recent listeners to the podcast or video viewers might not have heard the episodes with you, but you have been in quite a few. But yeah, the last time, do you remember when that was?
The last time was, trying to remember when it was, I think it was over 2 years ago now. And I was, because I remember it was a really sunny day and I was in my office at work, and we were talking about the recent changes that had happened in my life. And thinking back, if it was the summer and I was in my office, it must have been sort of June, July 2019, something like that.
Yeah, it was actually May 2019.
Okay, so even longer than I thought.
Yeah, but this is pre-COVID times. That's the last time, and then COVID happened and stuff like that. I mean, just to help those people who haven't heard those old episodes, how do we know each other, Andy?
We don't. I don't know who you
are. Total strangers.
Total strangers. No, we've known each other for years. You and I used to work together at the London School of English. And I started there in 2007, I think, 2008. And you were already a teacher there. And we were teachers for a while. And then I became like the director of studies.
Did you become my boss?
I became your boss. Yeah, I became your boss. And I remember we did like a whole, we went to Paris, didn't we? We did a presentation there at a conference. And that was like the first time that I'd sort of spent a lot of time with you outside of work. And our girlfriends at the time came, well, my girlfriend came to Paris with me. Your girlfriend was living in Paris. So they hung out and ate a lot of cheese and drank a lot of wine. I think they enjoyed the weekend more than we did. But yeah, you came to my wedding. Yeah, so we've known each other a long time. So even after you left London School, and I've now left London School as well, but we stayed in touch, and particularly through the podcast, talked about a lot of things. We've done other bits of training together. We did a webinar together back end of, I think that was 2013, something like that, end of 2013.
I'm trying to remember what the webinar was about now.
Oh, something amazing, something incredible. I think it was using tech in teaching, something like that. But yeah, long sort of history.
Okay. And also, whenever you're on the podcast, we always end up talking about things that begin with an M. So M words. Words that begin with an M.
Yeah.
Just by coincidence.
Yeah, that's right.
What I can think of four. Do you know what they are?
Well, I think the first time we spoke, I was doing a lot of stuff about millennials, which just, it dates what I was talking about and it dates me, but millennials and how millennials are entering the workplace and how we need to adjust our courses in order to cater for their needs and all that kind of stuff. So I did a lot of research on millennials, and I think actually your listeners helped me with some of that research, because I did, I sent out a SurveyMonkey thing. And so that would have been the first one. And another time we went to Paris as well, I did another conference in Paris. I think you were living there then. I went with Ben Butler, who's another colleague of ours. And we recorded a podcast in the lobby of a hotel or something.
Yeah, it was quite late. It was after you'd done your at this conference, and yeah, we sat in the lobby of the hotel and recorded the podcast there while sort of people sort of came and went and probably wondered what we were doing.
Yeah,
that was great. That was great fun with Ben Butler. Exactly.
That was just a funny trip, because I know I'm getting sidetracked, but it just reminded me that, do you remember when we went to the hotel and we checked in and there was no one on the front desk, and then we heard this voice, this French guy saying, "I'm stuck in the lift."
Oh, like, yeah.
And so he said, "What's your name?" And so we told him, and he goes, go behind the counter and look in the book, and they'll tell you what room you're in. And then the keys are here. So there's just this voice coming from the lift. And thank God you were there, because you were able to speak French to him better than we could. But it was the weirdest check-in process. And I was like,
how
weird.
You checked yourself in while the guy on the front desk was stuck in the lift. Did he manage to get out of the lift? I don't remember. Were we podcasting while he was just sitting
banging
in
on the doors? No, we came out, because we went around, we got the keys, and we went in, we checked everything, we dumped everything, we got changed, and we had to go out to an evening reception. And I think by the time we'd come down, he was there. And he was very sheepish and kind of apologetic, but it was just very, very funny. So, yeah, so anyway, back to your point. The first one was millennials. That was the first time we spoke. Oh, and then I remember the next time, didn't we do a couple of things about marathon running?
Yes.
And my reasons, my motivation for running marathons. That was, yes. That was a really good chat, actually. I really enjoyed that episode. Yeah. But I can't remember what else we talked about.
Millennials, marathons, moving, which is maybe the last thing, because you moved from London to Canterbury, and we talked about differences between London and Canterbury. And then the fourth one is Moby.
Moby.
The fact that you are, for some reason, well, people often mistake you for Moby, including a guy in an airport.
Oh, that was the worst, yeah. Well, it hasn't happened very often recently, I think, largely because I just haven't really been out very much over the last 18 months. Haven't done much traveling, but it used to happen a lot. I mean, like that time in France that I was telling you about when we did the conference together, I remember we went to a restaurant or a bar or something, and as we were leaving, all these French guys looked at me and started singing a Moby song with these lovely French accents. But the time you're talking about was in an airport, and this guy came running over to me, and he goes, "I'm your biggest fan." He's this American guy. He goes, Moby, I'm your biggest fan. I'm your biggest fan. And I was looking at him. I said, I'm not Moby. And he looked really confused. And he went, I know you're just saying that, but I want you to know that I'm your biggest fan. And I was with my boss at the time and another colleague, and they were just sort of standing there looking at me going, this is hilarious. I'm not gonna say anything. They were like my manager or my bodyguard or something. They were just pretending to go along with the whole thing. But
He was so convinced that you were Moby that he managed to like turn these people into your bodyguards and your like tour manager.
My entourage.
Oh my God. But okay. All right. Well, now, you know, at least listeners can see for themselves, you know, if the myth is actually true, if you really do look like Moby at all. But anyway, this time I thought that we would we thought that we would talk about another M word, or in fact, potentially a few other M words. But the main one is sort of related to your work and something that you've been talking about and working on recently, and that is the metaverse.
And teaching
English and learning English through the metaverse, which is a fascinating thing, and I haven't talked about it on the podcast before. So, well, what is the metaverse, and how can people use it for learning English? Okay. Over to you.
Well, it's a big question. Well, let me perhaps tell you a story about how I became involved in the metaverse. As we've just said, you and I met at the London School of English, and I was there for 14 years and left in the summer. And I was introduced to a company called Fluent Worlds, and really, really interesting and amazing stuff that they're doing. But basically, they teach languages in virtual immersive 3D worlds. So I was just blown away when I first saw the tech, and I was having a meeting with the founders of the business, and they were showing me around all these environments, and I thought, this is just incredible. The applications here for learning are amazing, because once you're in, you know, one of the things about learning a language, the reason why the English language industry has sort of grown along these lines of going over to countries and immersing yourself, language learning, not just English learning, but immersing yourself in the culture and the environments, is because it's the most effective way to learn. And I think online courses really struggle to replicate that kind of level, because they're quite 2D, they're quite flat, they're quite repetitive and dry. And for the first time with Fluent Worlds, I was seeing something that was so realistic and so immersive that I thought, I can see how you can have students in these environments interacting with other people and interacting with the environments and the objects within it. And it's just really going to drive their learning. So I started work there about 6 weeks ago. We're recording this, what is it today? The 1st of December. And I started working there sort of end of October. And about a week after I started, Mark Zuckerberg made this announcement to the world that he was changing the name of Facebook to Meta. And this expression metaverse, which I hadn't heard of before, was suddenly in everyone's consciousness and on everyone's lips. And essentially what the metaverse is exactly what Fluent Worlds is doing already. It's this idea that you exist in a virtual world. You have a little avatar that you can walk around and you can meet other people and you can interact. And Zuckerberg's kind of vision for this is all encompassing. It's going to change how we do meetings. So instead of being in a meeting like this where we're looking at each other, we might have our own little avatars and we can go and work collaboratively on projects. And he's also talking a lot about how it can be used for commerce, for gaming. And gaming's a good point, because a lot of these virtual environments have existed in gaming for a long time. I mean, you and I both used to play a lot of Grand Theft Auto when we were younger. Mm-hmm. And the first time I was using Fluent Worlds, it reminded me of Grand Theft Auto. I mean, I didn't go and pick up a baseball bat or commit any crimes or anything like that. But it's a very similar kind of sandbox feel that you're walking around and you can go in all sorts of different areas and explore different areas. But it's being used in that positive sense in order to teach and learn languages.
So it's called the metaverse, right?
Yeah. It's called the metaverse, yeah.
But is there only one? I mean, so something like Fluent Worlds, do they just provide you with a way to get into the metaverse, or are there many different sort of metaverses in a sense that like the way you've got, you know, if you compare it to social media, you've got Facebook and you've got Twitter and you've got, you know, Instagram and so on. And these are not the same world, although you can kind of share things between them. So is there one single metaverse, or are there a number of different metaverses?
Well, the term metaverse comes from a novel from 1994 called Snow Crash, which was written by Neal Stephenson. I've not read the book, but it's a science fiction writer. And the idea is that there is one metaverse that we can go and explore together. And the character in that book is called Hero Protagonist, which is quite a cool name for a character. Very, very meta. But I think the reality is that, at least initially, there's going to be several metaverses. And the idea of a metaverse is a place where you can go and virtually interact with people. Now, ultimately, we may find that these metaverses converge. It's all becoming quite scientific already, but they might converge into one kind of shared collaborative space. And like the internet, for example, you've got to think about it. Think of it like the internet. You've got a number of different browsers, but ultimately it's all shared information. And I think the metaverse is a way of reinventing the internet. So everybody is going to have their own way into the metaverse. But for example, you might go into one version of the metaverse and you might go to this part of it to learn languages, or you might go to this part of it to do some shopping, or you might, you know, you go to this part to do some gaming, for example. That's certainly how Mark Zuckerberg is envisioning it. Now, the metaverse that Fluent Worlds has is their own proprietary environments, and they've got about 50 different environments that you can explore together with other students, with teachers. And it's just really exciting, because when I got the job and people were asking me about my new job, this was my explanation. So I say, okay, so what I do is I'm working for a company that offers English language training and language training in virtual immersive 3D worlds. Whew, that's a long sentence. And then after the metaverse announcement, people say, what do you do? I said, well, we do language training in the metaverse. And people get it. They're like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, that's cool. I understand that now, yeah. So for us, it's been a really interesting time these last few weeks, because interest in what we do has really spiked, and that sort of proposition is much clearer in people's heads. And I think it's a great validation for the founders of the business. So one of the founders is Dr. Linda Bradford, and she did a PhD into immersive learning. This is about 10 years ago. And she found that the efficacy of learners in virtual environments was actually even more effective than it is in the classroom, because instead of sitting and studying and looking at a teacher, they're actually moving around and they're doing and they're interacting with each other. So it was suddenly very, very kind of eye-opening in a sense. And she envisaged that there was a future for this kind of teaching. There was a future for this kind of learning in the metaverse. And that was 10 years ago. And Fluent Worlds have been quite successful with their language apps. So they've got these two amazing apps. The first one is called Fluent Worlds. And it's a little bit like a game. So you go in, you have your little character, and you start in Central Park as a beginner of English. And you walk around and you speak to characters, and they'll ask you questions, and you have to choose the best response. And initially, it was just choosing the best response from four separate answers. But then they developed speech recognition software with the founder of the Amazon Echo. And so you can actually say your response. So then it starts analyzing your accent as well and gives you feedback on that. So it's straight away, it's something that is really very, very cool and very, very different to what's out there at the moment. On the back of that, they developed a second app, which is called Perfect Accent. And when you start with Perfect Accent, it maps your voice. So you say a few example sentences and it maps your voice, and then you can choose various different English areas to practice, such as business English, traveling, medical English, all those kinds of things. I think there's about 44 different categories. And it's all to do with improving your pronunciation. So the two apps together are great sort of self-study tools. And then this year, they're launching something called Fluent Wales Academy, which is my role to be the director of that and to grow that side of the business. And this is the live teaching side. So, yeah, it's a very, very interesting and exciting area. And I've sort of happened to land right in the middle of it.
So when someone uses this particular multiverse, so we'll use Fluent Worlds as an example, when they sort of, yeah, as you said, a bit like a computer game, I guess you create your avatar and make it look like you. Yeah. And then when you're playing the game, what perspective is it? Is it first person perspective or is it like, is that third person? I mean, what do you see? Do you see your character in front of you a bit like in Grand Theft Auto or is it first person where you are literally looking through the eyes of the character?
So there's two different, there's two different versions. The desktop version is a bit like Grand Theft Auto in the sense that you're just behind the character, but you can change that. Mm-hmm. So you can be over the shoulder, you can be third person or you can be first person. We've also optimized it for VR as well. So there you'll just be seeing this. If you were wearing your headset, you would be looking straight out and seeing everything that's there. And in terms of what you look like, yes, you can choose what you look like. You can choose your character. You can customize it. There's a lot of options, or you can just click a dice thing and it will create a random person for you. And you can go in as that character. There's also this very, very cool thing coming where once you set up, you can look at your webcam and it will take an image of you. And I think in about 25 seconds, it creates a 3D avatar that looks like, in my case, Moby, but it will look like you. So you can actually go in as yourself.
Luka Modric. Mine would look like Luka Modric or I don't know who else. Probably that'll do. Luka Modric.
I was going to say Andy Peters, but Andy Crane. I don't think anyone's going to know who Andy Crane is, but if you have any British listeners, they might understand who he is.
He was, just for those who don't know, he was a TV presenter on kids' TV when we were growing up, and Andy Crane used to present his show from the broom cupboard, is what they called it. It's like a tiny little studio, and he called it the broom cupboard, and he had a little puppet that would talk to him as well. Ed the Duck, wasn't it?
Ed the Duck,
So it's a bit like a broom cupboard, the place where I do this. Okay, all right, so cool. So I get the idea that it's kind of like the fact that it's somehow more adaptable in the sense that, you know, traditional language classrooms, as you said, you end up sitting at a desk a lot of the time. If you're a student, you end up sitting at a desk a lot of the time. It's quite a traditional structure, quite limited in the sense that often, although, you know, in classrooms these days, we try to break this structure of just sitting at a desk and the teacher stands up and it's all very teacher oriented. It is possible to break that and make it more learner-centered, but that's quite difficult. But intrinsically, the metaverse is much more open. And I suppose that you would imagine replicates the real world much more closely than a classroom. I'm wondering what the limitations might be for it. I mean, and also another thing I'm thinking about is like I don't know if you've ever seen the Animatrix. Did you ever see that? It's a series of animations based on the Matrix universe.
Okay.
The universe of the Matrix. And the Animatrix absolutely terrified me when I saw it. I was in my 20s, but it still terrified me because one of the episodes shows you how the Matrix was created. And sort of what happened. I mean, I'm not like a technophobe or a Luddite or anything like that, but I'm sure that, you know, some people find it a little frightening, the idea that there is this sort of virtual world and that we are more and more being brought into it. And you know, what would you reckon? I mean, like, do you think that people are fearful about the idea of a virtual world which is potentially controlled by, you know, people that is there something scary about it, or is that just paranoia?
I think that, you know, there's always a natural reaction to anything like this that comes along, and people, I mean, I remember our former boss at London School said to you and I think at the same time, don't know why, but he said, I don't want to go on Facebook. I've got real friends who I see and I go to the pub with them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, fine. You know, it's fine. It's not, there is no compulsion to go to do any of this sort of thing. What I would say though about the metaverse and what I would say about Fluent Worlds in particular is, I would say that over the last 18 months to 2 years, I mean, everything has changed. Everything has changed, and almost every single one of your listeners will have experienced great change in their lives, and particularly around how we work and how we communicate. You know, we're spending so much more time on our screens. And you can look at Fluent Worlds as another communication tool, but mm-hmm. a very, very cool one, a very, very different one. So, for example, when you're in these environments, you can also switch your webcam on, so you can still see each other, if you like. We don't expect our students to do that. There's no demand for them to do that, because it gets back to my point before about how sometimes in these meetings, you don't want to have your camera on. You want to be present. You want to show that you're present, and you can show that you're present by moving your character around and interacting, but you don't necessarily want people to see you. You know, for example, you might have kids running around like I did, or you might just be having a bad hair day. Not that I would know about that, but you know, you take my point. And so, but you can switch your camera on. You can share your screen. You can do all of these different things that you would normally do on video conferencing tools. I think the difference between Teams, for example, and Zoom, though Teams is an interesting point because they're also developing Mesh, which is their version of the metaverse. So if you have a look at it afterwards, you can Google it, and they're creating avatars for everybody as well. And I think it just gives people another way of working, and it gives people a sort of more options in terms of how they wish to virtually communicate. Because even though we are seeing each other, we are still virtually communicating. But it's not seen as weird now, is it? It's not seen as weird to have a Skype call or a Zoom call or a Teams call, but it's still virtual communication. What we do is we add, what the metaverse does is it adds another layer to that. And it allows you that little bit of freedom to choose how you look and choose how you interact. And I think particularly for language learning, that's really empowering. Because do you remember when we were teachers at London School, you'd always get certain students that were so loud and they would always dominate the class. And then you'd have other students that were really shy and reticent, and they would they'd be very nervous about speaking English. And I remember once there was a Japanese guy who was very, very quiet and very, very reticent and in my class. And then out of the class, I saw him speaking with two other Japanese people. And the other two were just in hysterics. They were laughing at everything he said. You know, and I realized, oh, wow, this guy's got something about him. He's got this sort of, he's a real character. He's a real funny guy. But for some reason, he shuts down when he moves into English. And what we saw when we had to move a lot of our courses online at the London School last year was how a lot of these shyer students really blossomed in virtual environments, because there's that sort of that fourth wall, if you like, between us now and between, you know, the students. And those students that would dominate and were louder, they found it actually, they respected more the turn-taking element of being in a virtual classroom. Now, being in the metaverse gives you another layer, because you can create your own avatar that looks like you if you want, or you don't have to. If you want to have green hair and, you know, wear a dress, that's absolutely fine. You can do all of those things, because it's all about self-expression. And I think what the metaverse does is it puts a lot of creativity back in the hands of the learner. They can have so much more control about how they appear, how they interact, and so on.
Do you reckon the skills that you learn, learning English in the metaverse, can be applied to the real world?
Absolutely, yeah.
You reckon?
Yeah. Well, to give you an example, I was doing a thing last week where I was walking somebody through our virtual airport, and we were talking about, you know, if you were going to do a lesson on business travel, for example, or travel in general, let's talk about all the different ways we could use this environment. So we walked over to the self-check-in desks, and then we were saying, okay, so what kind of things do you need at this stage? Okay, you need your passport, you need your baggage, and okay, and what's that thing behind the self-check-in desk? It's the baggage, it's the conveyor belt. you know, all of those things. So you can elicit this vocabulary and you're seeing it and you're doing it. And then we walked up the stairs and I was like, so what would you normally do now when you're at the airport, if you have time? And I said, oh, go for a coffee. So we walked across to the coffee shop and we sat down and we talked about coffee for a little while. Then we went through into the thing and there was things like currency exchange. There was, we looked up at the signs on the ceiling. So, you know, in airports, because you're dealing with international travelers, you have fixed kind of signs. So there's like a picture of a guy in a hat pointing and he's like, that means the security control. Yeah, then there's a picture of money and that's currency exchange. So it's eliciting all of this kind of language from the learner and then saying, well, you know, this is what it is in English, et cetera, et cetera. And then it carries on. Then you go through the scanners. So I was saying to the teacher, you could teach prepositions here. So do you go over the scanner? Do you go under the scanner? Do you go through the scanner? What does your bag do? You know, all those kinds of things. And how do you feel at this stage? And you elicit stories and you elicit experiences. And so all of this stuff means that when the student next finds himself in that situation, they're much better equipped because they've seen it and they've done it. So instead of seeing a bunch of words on a piece of paper and trying to remember them, you're actually seeing that vocabulary in action. You're actually feeling it and you're using it as you go. And that's incredibly powerful. And another thing that Mark Zuckerberg said about the metaverse, he said education won't look anything like education currently looks in the metaverse. And I think that was one of the most salient points he made in his whole presentation. And the lessons that we're running in Fluent Worlds don't look anything like the lessons that you and I would have taught at the London School or we would have taught online. And I think it's the best way to describe it is you're taking students with you on a journey. You're taking them with you through these environments. And there's so many learning points and rich kind of content that you bring out. And for the teacher, it's about having a lesson plan, of course, but it's more about understanding where everything is in the environment and then taking students to all those different points and having them, you know, creating discussions and creating learning moments around each of those points. It's very, very cool. And you tell them excited about it.
Yeah. No, it sounds really great. And I suppose there are moments when if it's necessary, you can sort of go to a more traditional classroom environment where you can, if you want, you can have a whiteboard. If you want to like do language feedback or if you want to, you know, detail some grammar points or something like that, there the possibilities are really open that you can just essentially start putting words on the screen in front of them. And showing them.
So you've got different tools. Yeah, you've got a chat box so you can put vocabulary in there. In each of the environments, we have these big screens. So, for example, you'll be walking down the strip in Las Vegas and there's a huge big billboard and that's one of our share screens. So you can put video content there. You can use it as a whiteboard. You can put slides. You can put anything on there. And then the really cool thing that the teacher has, he's got two really cool things. The first one is you can recall students from wherever they are. So if they've run off to the other side of Las Vegas and you don't know where they are, you can just click a button. And everyone flies in towards you and then you're all assembled around the screen so you can bring people back and focus them.
You can assemble everyone with a button, just like...
Exactly, Avengers assemble. Exactly, yeah. And the other really cool thing, and I've never seen this on any other product, but there's something called proximity voice. And, you know, one day, Luke, I'll invite you into the metaverse and you and I can do a podcast from there.
Yeah.
But what you can do is... You've got global voice, so everybody in your class, say you've got 10 students in your class, can hear you. If you put proximity voice or nearby voice on, it creates like a little bubble, if you like, around you, and everyone within that bubble can hear you. But if you walk out of that bubble, you get quieter and quieter and quieter. Okay, that's miming for you. So that's really clever because if you think about it, if you ever had a lesson in Zoom or Teams, you've got to use breakout rooms. In Fluent Worlds, you can say to students, so let's say you're in Las Vegas, you say, okay, I want you two to go over there and stand by the fountains of the Bellagio. I want you guys to come over here and stand outside this cafe here. And in each group, they'll be able to hear each other, but they won't be able to hear everyone else. So it's a really clever way of doing group work in a virtual environment, or pair work, rather.
Yeah, it's like just mapping everything into a physical space. Yeah, it's fascinating. Where do you think it's going to go in the future? What do you think is going to happen in 5, 10 years or more?
Good question. I think it's going to revolutionize the way we teach. I really think that the traditional methods of online teaching and the traditional, particularly the asynchronous courses, you know, those self-study ones where you're doing endless flashcards and learning words and repeating and filling in sentences, all those kinds of things. I think the days for those kinds of courses are numbered, because I think that what we have here is a great tool to bring people together in a sort of as a very realistic environment. So we can have students from all over the world who, for whatever reason, cannot travel. And you know what? This was happening before the pandemic anyway. You know, we were seeing a rise, an increase in virtual learning anyway. I mean, the pandemic just sped that thing up in terms of how we teach and how we learn. I think there's always going to be face-to-face teaching, but this is going to be the next best thing. And in many ways, it's going to be even more effective because of all of those reasons I've just outlined. The fact that it puts you in environments that you can genuinely practice. You know, we've got a hotel lobby, for example, to teach hospitality English. We've got a doctor's office to teach medical English. You know, we've got all of these cool environments, and we can create environments for people as well. So we just recently agreed a deal with a big school in Egypt, and they wanted us to build a couple of environments for their young learners. So we built like a farmyard. And it's brilliant. You go in and there's stables with horses and cows, and there's a barking dog and so on. And you know, you can walk around and then you can click on something and it will tell you what it is. It'll give you the word. And it's got all of the, being a farm, we've got all these crops planted as well. So you can click on it and it will say tomato, and then it will give you more information and it will teach you how to pronounce it and so on. So it's just this amazing matrix style learning environment that we can kind of get lost in. And there's a couple of other things, because it's also gamified everything. I think gamifying things makes it much more engaging as well. So in our environments, there are things that you can do that you wouldn't normally be able to do in the real world. For example, you can fly. So if you need to get from one part to another quite quickly, you can go up into the air, you can fly around, you can go and find people. And even like when you're doing pair work, you can say, right, you two, I want you to fly up there. And then you'll hear each other, but we won't be able to hear you down here on the ground. So things like that. It just makes it really creative, really, really fun.
It's amazing. Yeah. It does. It just sort of, you know, makes me wonder how it will change the world and how it's going to change human experience and what our everyday life will be like when you have this kind of thing going on. To, you know, at a large level. I mean, we're already quite deeply connected to the online world in the sense that we spend a lot of our time, you know, you just see a lot of the people on their phones looking at things. They're in Facebook, they're on Twitter or wherever it is, on whatever social network they're looking at. And just like, you know, just to project that to the point where when the metaverse or online worlds have become a lot more sophisticated, it's not, I mean, I wonder what it's going to look like in the real world, which is kind of why I refer to the Matrix, because obviously that is a very fearful version of basically the end, ultimate point being that just people are in pods directly connected to the central nervous system, and they don't realize it either. They've kind of like the separation has gone, like people don't realize it, and there's the sense that someone else is in control. And people are being exploited in the most sort of, deep way. How is this going to change a person's everyday life? I don't know if that's a question that you can answer.
It'll change people's everyday life in the same way the internet did. I think, you know, the internet has changed people's lives in a whole bunch of ways. And what the metaverse does is I think it just increases connectivity in another way, in a sort of a more human way in many respects, because the whole thing, you know, we've done a lot of work. You and I have done a lot of work around not just language training, but communication training.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you've got those visual clues when you speak to somebody. And I think that learning in the metaverse is going to do that as well. You're going to be able to read body language. You're going to be able to pick up on the visual clues of the other avatars in there. Oh, yeah. Now, one of the things that Mark Zuckerberg kept saying in his presentation is a lot of this hasn't been built yet. A lot of this doesn't exist yet. And he was quite open in saying, you know, we don't really know exactly what it's going to look like. But, you know, the more you read about it, I don't think it's something that's a fad. I don't think it's something that's going to go away. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the power of it is immense. So getting back to when Fluent Worlds was first built. So Dr. Linda Bradford did a research project and they built a very sort of very early version of these virtual environments. And they took students through a semester. They were art students. And at the end of this experiment, they assessed them and all of them, or most of them, made improvements. And there were some outliers. There were some that didn't improve as much, or they were much lower than expected, but there were some that were much higher than expected. And so she followed up with all of these outliers. And there was one guy in particular, a guy in Scotland. And she said, you know, congratulations, you've completed this program and you did exceptionally well. I just want to understand is there anything different about your circumstances to anyone else? And he said, well, you know, throughout the whole semester, I have been in a hospital bed recovering from an operation. And what I loved about learning in the metaverse and learning in your virtual worlds was that none of my peers, none of the other students knew any of that about me. They just saw a character moving around and walking around and interacting. And so that sort of transformational power is really, really impressive, you know, the fact that it's a leveler in many respects. And that's what virtual communication, if it's done properly, can do for you.
Yeah, it can make it a level playing field. Like you said, exactly. About the Japanese guy, I mean, or it doesn't have to be Japanese. It could be anyone who's sort of like socially less comfortable in an actual room where you've got people whose voices are louder or more physically dominant or whatever it is, that it can sort of level that playing field somehow. Yeah, I just the thought occurs to me, like, who's in charge though? Who's in charge of the metaverse? You know, again, I can't get my head out of you know, science fiction films I've seen, but yeah. You know, that's just one part of the whole picture.
But I think it's going to be balance, isn't it? It's like anything. You know, I'm going to finish this call with you. I'm going to go outside and go running. It's a beautiful sunny day. It's a bit cold, but it is about balancing your screen time and your family time and your real lifetime. But ultimately, how we work and how we live is going to be much more virtual. I don't know. I mean, I haven't been into the office for my new employer because they're an American company. So I don't know when I'll actually go and visit them. But I hadn't been into the offices of London School. I think I went once in the last 10 months that I was there. And it didn't impact on how I do my job. I'm still able to do what I do, and I'm still able to be effective in what I do. And of course, you know, there are times where you miss that collaborative side of things, of being with people. But you know,
you don't have to wear trousers, so you know.
But I am wearing trousers.
I am too, listeners. But if I, you know, I could have not. If I'd wanted to.
I mean, I'm wearing comfortable trousers. Let's be clear. I'm wearing, you know, tracky dacks, but, you know, they're still...
Tracky dacks. Tracky bees.
Tracky bees, yeah, tracky dacks.
Tracksuit bottoms. Mm. Viewers, listeners. Okay, very, very interesting stuff. And I love the offer of recording a podcast in the Matrix. I mean, metaverse. anytime. That would be really cool. It would be a really interesting thing. I guess it's possible to like record the video for that as well, so we could do
a
whole...
Yes. Well, we've been talking at work about creating a podcast or a metacast. And we're looking at doing sort of 30-minute episodes where you will be in the environment as your avatar, mm-hmm. and it will be like this, but we'll be doing it virtually. We can have our webcams on as well, but we're just figuring out how you then film within each environment. So we're going to build a virtual podcast studio. So yeah, we'd love to have you on.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Or maybe we can do it. We can do a collab. But you know, the other thing I was going to say about this is please do have a look at fluentworlds.com or Google Fluent Worlds Academy, because we're going to be running a holiday promotion. So I think, you know, your listeners, if you're interested in this and you're interested in learning a little bit more about what the metaverse is and how it can help you with your language learning, please do come along and visit us. So are we okay to share the links at the end of the podcast?
Yeah, I'll put the links in the description. Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, great. Interesting stuff, Andy. Now, have you got any more time for maybe a one or two other M words?
M words, yeah. I have a bone to pick with you, Luke.
Yeah, go on.
So this whole M word thing is purely coincidental. You know, I don't wait 2 years for an M word to come along and then get in touch with you. It just happens to be that the things that you and I want to talk to you about always begin with an M. And there was another one. And because we spoke, was it earlier in the year or even the end of last year? And yeah. I said, look, are you watching The Mandalorian? And you were like, yeah, it's great, isn't it? And I was like, yeah. I said, why do we do a podcast about it? And you said, oh, no, I've already got some other friends I'm going to do a podcast about The Mandalorian with.
Yeah, well.
And I thought, okay, great. I look forward to listening to that when it comes out. But it never did.
Yeah.
So let's talk about The Mandalorian.
Yeah, just to explain, just that a few people got in touch with me, like listeners said, hey, when are you going to do an episode about The Mandalorian? Because, you know, people know that I'm a sort of a Star Wars fan, although these days, and then one of my friends got in touch and said, hey, you're going to do something about The Mandalorian? I was like, yeah, I definitely would like to do that. And then I just didn't, you know, and then the moment passed,
yeah.
You know, like some things are just sort of in the zeitgeist and, you know, you want to talk about them. For example, at the moment, I'm just really want to talk about the new Beatles documentary and really inspired to talk about that. But then, you know, in terms of just the time that I have to record and prepare episodes and do them, sometimes the window of availability is not there. And then, you know, then the next thing comes along. Like I sometimes compare doing this podcast, it's a bit like a train. It's just constantly moving forwards. And it's hard to sort of like, you know, stop it and do maintenance on it or stop at certain places. It's just constantly moving forward. So yeah, that's why. But I think it's good to talk about The Mandalorian now for two reasons. One reason is that the Book of Boba Fett is coming out, which is the next sort of Star Wars TV series. Mm. And that is, I think, going to be a sort of a continuation or maybe a spin-off from The Mandalorian. So it is going to be back on, you know, on people's minds again. Mm. And secondly, the other thing is that we can probably do spoilers now, because it's been quite a long time since series two was streamed. And so I think it's safe to talk about spoilers. But can you remember? Can you remember all the things that you wanted to say about it?
You know, you're right. The spoiler, because there's one huge spoiler at the end of season two. And even now, I'm not sure I feel comfortable talking too much about that. There was a very exciting appearance from a character.
I want to talk about it, though.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah, let's do it. Come on. Spoiler alert for the end of season two of The Mandalorian. If you don't want to know what happens at the end, then, you know, then use your discretion going forwards.
For me, you know, the thing that I really liked about The Mandalorian was the first season, it was just nice being back in that universe. You know, I think, a bit like you, I really liked the first Star Wars films, hated the prequels, was like a bit about the last three. But
especially Rise of Skywalker. Oh my God, absolute disaster. But anyway, don't get me started on that. I would like to say, though, that my relationship with Star Wars is, as you said, I love the original trilogy. And I think you and I both are sort of the similar generation, same generation, where you know, we grew up with the toys, and so it's sort of very special for us, Star Wars. Then the prequels came out. A whole new generation of people love the prequels and think they're great, you know, but it's divided opinion. We're not, we don't really like it, you know. Some parts of it were good, but on the whole, we weren't so keen on the prequels. And then the new sequel trilogy came out. Personally, I quite liked The Force Awakens, and I was willing to give it a chance. It's like, okay, they got some things right, you know, the universe felt right. It looked right. Maybe the new characters, you know, the writing wasn't so good, really. And J.J. Abrams, the director, doesn't really know how to conclude a story. He's good at setting up mysteries, but not very good at answering and dealing with them.
He always likes to have a closed box, doesn't he? He was like, on Lost, there was the hatch. There's always a mystery box of some description.
And then, but it's ultimately disappointing because he's good at building up expectations and teasing ideas, but they're not very good at delivering a proper narrative that concludes in a satisfying way. The Last Jedi, I actually loved it when I saw it in the cinema. I saw it because films are released a couple of days earlier in France than the rest of the world for some reason. And so I went to see it in the morning, the day it was released. Hadn't seen any of the reviews or comments from other people. Sat in the cinema and absolutely loved it. I had a fantastic time because I thought they're doing something different with the story, and Luke Skywalker's in it. And I love Mark Hamill. And I, you know, I wasn't being all critical about it. I just enjoyed the ride and didn't know what was going to happen next. And then I saw all the online hate for it, and I couldn't understand it. I kind of understand where they're coming from now, having thought about it. Then The Last Jedi, The Rise of Skywalker is the third one. I thought, again, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, that was amazing. But then when I actually tried to talk about it on the podcast, I realized, oh, wait a minute. No, it's awful. When I really thought about it, I realized it was awful. And my summary of that is it's shiny bollocks. Shiny bollocks. It's shiny. It looks fantastic, but it's just bollocks.
You know,
it's very disappointing, really.
The worst thing about that was they did the first. I'm like, The Force Awakens, I kind of thought, this is great. It's setting the scene. It's got new characters. It's got, there's a logical continuation here. I like that a lot. And then the second one, right, was it Last Skywalker?
The Last Jedi, yeah.
That was brilliant. Like you, I thought it was amazing because it was different and it was taking it in an interesting direction. But then you read all the stuff about how there was arguments and rewrites and all that kind of stuff. But then the third film kind of swept the second film under the carpet like it didn't happen. And it just tied up all the loose ends from the first film. So it was like, what was the point of that? And it was just overblown. There was too much going on.
It made no sense at all.
It's a bit like Harry Potter looking for Horcruxes with having to get all these bits from all over the galaxy and
bring back Palpatine. Not necessarily a bad idea, but it just got really, really stupid, like really badly stupid. Anyway.
So The Mandalorian came along at the right time because I was feeling a bit like, oh, that was a bit disappointing. But then we were straight back into that kind of original universe, and there was just so many little things in that first season, like the whole thing with the Jawas, and he's driving that big sand crawler machine, you know, all these little nods to the original, and the fact that, you know, did you say Boba Fett or Boba Fett?
I said Boba Fett.
Potato, potato. He says potato. he died supposedly in Return of the Jedi, and then you find, you know, they've got his armor and stuff. And I just like those nods to the original trilogy. And it's made with such kind of love and care and understanding of what fans liked. And even if nothing much really happens in that first season, it's just like a Western. I like the fact that, you know, it's like a stranger in town. He goes to a new place every week and he helps somebody out. And it's all kind of rooted in that.
It's like a 90s TV show. You know, those 90s TV shows where it's just like a character, like a Western, a character who goes from town to town and has little mini adventures, little mini stories.
Yeah.
And in the first season, there is that general arc of like the child, you know, this little Grogu, we learn his name is Grogu and who he is. And we sort of start to realize he's incredibly important and bad guys are trying to get him and, you know, lots of things like that. And so there is a bit of an arc that begins, and it's much more developed in the second season. But yeah, I love that idea that it's like a 90s TV show, and it's sort of almost like the aesthetic of it was like that too.
Yeah.
One of the things that we like about the original Star Wars trilogy is the production design, and how some of it's kind of sketchy. Like there are those moments in the original film where little mistakes happen, like a stormtrooper whacks his head on the ceiling and stuff like that. And clearly the stormtroopers can't really see through their helmets very well, and they're struggling to shoot. And, you know, it's like really sketchy. The bits are falling off the set. And in The Mandalorian, you get that feeling of everything's a bit sketchy. Some of the characters got these rubber masks on that sort of bend it awkwardly when they turn.
Yeah.
And even The Mandalorian himself, you know that the actor can't see out of the helmet properly. But those limitations and those little problems sort of make it cute and...
Yeah, and also there was a thing, I think it was in the second season, where they've got two stormtroopers trying to shoot a can, and they keep missing, and it's that joke that stormtroopers are just got the worst aim, and he's like, there must be something wrong with this gun, you know?
Yeah, it got a bit self-referential at that point, but that's fun.
That's fun, but you're right in the sense that it is like a 90s TV show, because, you know, there's certain episodes where it's more or less filmed in the same location.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the prison break. You know, there's one where they had to break a prisoner out of a facility with Bill Burr.
Bill Burr was in that one,
And he was interesting.
Yeah.
So there's some of them, which I was reading this thing, you know, they had the Friends reunion not so long ago. I was reading this thing about how in order to make the budget last to film a season, they had to isolate certain episodes just in one location. So the famous one is the bit where they're all getting ready to go out and Joey puts on all of Chandler's clothes. You know, that one.
I don't remember that one.
And it's just all filmed in the apartment.
Right.
And there was elements of that in The Mandalorian as well. And it just means that you've got to craft more engaging stories. And it's all about storytelling for me. Like right now we're watching Succession. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Just incredible. It's just, you know, it's just really well written, and it's just this story arc. And I think that's what kind of catches you, and that's what brings you in. And I think with The Mandalorian, there's a story arc, not just of what happens to Grogu, but also what happens to him. The whole thing about how he can't let his face be seen, and because this is the way, and all that kind of stuff.
Some bits are a bit cheesy. Like some of the dialogue is a bit cheesy. Like there's lots of people talking about, you know, he needs to be with his own kind. Everyone's talking about people's, like, you know, that sort of cheesy Star Wars, like a George Lucas dialogue that they've tried to replicate. And at times it's a bit, you know, a bit cringeworthy. But ultimately, I enjoyed the show. I thought the second series was better.
Yeah.
And there were some really exciting moments in that. And plus, you know, all this kind of fan service for the people who've seen the cartoons and stuff, which I haven't seen. So I don't know about those other Mandalorian characters, really, and the Darksaber and stuff. That doesn't really mean a lot to me.
It's part of the mythology, apparently. Yeah, I read something about that as well. There was one cat, I can't remember what her name was, but there was one of the Jedis that is in one of the episodes, and fans were very excited that she was in there.
Ahsoka Tano or something, that she's in... She's in one of the Star Wars cartoons, and she's sort of like trains with Anakin Skywalker and stuff.
And there's apparently a story arc in that that's all about the Dark Blade, and they think it's going to... Anyway, we're getting quite geeky here. But the other thing is quite nice is how at the end of the original Star Wars trilogy, you think, okay, great, they've won. It's amazing. The goodies have won, the baddies have lost, all the Ewoks are dancing. And then at the end of The Force Awakens and those films, I think I said to somebody, it just makes me a bit sad because all of their lives, Han, Luke and Leia, they've all gone wrong. You know, none of them are happy. None of them got sort of the success or the happiness that they wanted.
Mm.
And then the new canon, things like Rogue One and then The Mandalorian shows you kind of what happened to the universe after that. And one of the themes that goes through The Mandalorian is how the Rebellion, who are now the New Republic, they're trying to police the galaxy, and they're all sort of like lone guys flying around in X-Fighters, X-Wing, saying, well, there's nothing I can do, mate, you know. So it's that fallout from a great kind of coup and overthrow, a revolution, and how do you rebuild from there? I thought that was quite an interesting side of it as well.
Yeah, and that does feed into the Wild West thing, which is all about attempting to civilize potentially a universe that that can't be civilized, and there are sort of competing forces. There's the sort of the more democratic goodies, you know, the Republic, and then the dark side, the Empire or the New Order or whatever they call the First Order. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know exactly where it all fits in the timeline. It's after the Return of the Jedi, basically. And then the Mandalorian is just sort of like stuck in the middle of it all. He's just a man trying to make his way through the universe, as Boba Fett says. So interesting. So
should we talk about the big spoiler then? Because you just mentioned Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, let's talk about the big spoiler, the moment that happens at the end of the second series. So something happens. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want the spoiler, this is when you need to, I don't know, what, hit the ejector seat or skip forwards or something like that. Maybe I can put something on the screen to say skip forwards by, you know, 5 minutes or something. So, yeah, what happens then at the end of the second series?
So it all culminates with the Mandalorian and Grogu being on this spaceship, and
Grogu's been sort of taken.
No, they got him. They got him back by this point. Grogu had been taken, but they managed to rescue him.
Right,
and because what they were doing with Grogu, they're trying to get him back to his kind, and his kind are the Jedi. So they took him to that Jedi temple, and he sort of started using the Force, but he attracted the baddies, and they came and took him, and then they managed to get Grogu back, and then
they go to this big spaceship where Grogu had been kept by the guy from Breaking Bad.
Darth Moff Sidious.
Gus Fring or whatever, Sidious. Gus Fring from Breaking Bad basically has got him. Sorry for the Star Wars fans who know his name and are hating the fact that we're not using the right names. I do apologize. I mean, we're geeky, but we're not that geeky, right?
Yeah.
So Grogu's been taken by this bad sort of
dude.
Bad guy. Yeah, bad dude. And yeah, they've managed to get Grogu back somehow. The Mandalorian has a fight with Gus Fring in very exciting circumstances, and there's like Beskar armor and a Beskar spear and the dark saber. Really cool stuff. Yeah. And but they got Grogu back, but they don't realize that Gus Fring has called for backup.
He's got metal army, hasn't he?
It's a full, very nasty looking army of super robot stormtrooper sort of terminators who arrive, and they're really badass, and there's like way too many of them, and there's only a few Mandalorians. They're totally outnumbered,
and it finishes they're on the bridge, aren't they? They're on the bridge of this ship. They've closed the doors, and these things are like banging on the doors, and you can see the dents coming in, and you think, oh, how are they going to get out of this?
Yeah, a bit of a cliffhanger,
and then an X-wing flies past, and one of the characters says, oh wow, one X-wing, is that all they've sent? And then, because they're on the bridge, they've got all these sort of screens with security cameras, and you see this shadowy figure emerge. Who's it gonna be?
A hooded figure, character in a cape and a hood,
and then he fires up a lightsaber, and it's a green lightsaber, and you're thinking, could it really be?
Is that possible? How is that going to fit in the timeline? Really? Is that really possibly Luke Skywalker?
And listeners, it was Luke Skywalker, and he basically annihilates all the robots, comes into the bridge, and then they give him little Yoda, Grogu.
And that's how it finishes. I have to say, it's a very touching moment. I mean, where the Mandalorian, what's his name? I can't remember. Sorry, Star Wars fans. I'm so sorry. We can't remember his name. But then let's say the Mandalorian has to hand over Grogu, this little...
Jin. He's called Jin.
Jin. His name's Jin. They have to hand over this little baby Yoda, as everyone's calling him. And they've obviously bonded like really strongly over the course of the two seasons. And it's a very touching moment. I mean, you know, I wiped away a tear, I have to say, at that moment. And that's really great that I was emotionally invested and engaged. That's what we want from good stories and especially from Star Wars. So that was very interesting. But so what did you think though of the return of Luke Skywalker? How did it?
I loved it. We talked about spoilers before. Unfortunately, I spoiled it for myself, and I kind of knew ahead of time that it was going to happen.
Yeah.
But it was still very, very cool. Very, very cleverly done. And I mean, he was very sort of CGI, wasn't he? Because it was young Luke Skywalker and old Mark Hamill can't play him. But I thought it looked realistic enough.
It was a little bit floaty face, sort of uncanny valley, a little bit to me. I mean, the way they did it was very clever that they had, first of all, the actor who was doing the physical stuff. And it was a really cool sequence of him dispatching all these robots. And it was another hallway lightsaber sequence. Mm. I mean, we had one in Rogue One where Darth Vader tears his way through some rebel guards or whatever, and that's awesome. And then so it was another hallway sequence, and that was really great. And he showed off all his amazing skills and abilities, which we hadn't really seen before. So it's a little bit of like, he's like so much more skilled than he was in Return of the Jedi. Okay, maybe he's been training. All right, fine. I'll suspend my disbelief. But then when I was like, this is better be good. And he pulled off the hood, and I have to say, it was a little bit like his face was just kind of floating in front of like this outfit. I mean, they had the physical actor, the guy who played the body of young Luke. And they used Mark Hamill as well to act out the scene. Okay. And then they mapped the young Luke's face onto the face of old art Mark Hamill. So like really clever motion capture stuff that they did. But I don't know, the line around his face was just, I was like, sorry, it's still not quite right. Still looks like a floaty little graphic in front of his face. Even though it was really good, it wasn't good enough.
I'd have to watch it again. You know what? The first, you know what spoiled it for me? I saw somebody had cut that whole sequence where he comes onto the ship and dispatches, kills all the droids, and they cut it to Bonnie Tyler's holding out for a hero. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, I will send it to you. It is very, very good. So it's a song that was big here in the 80s, and somebody cut the whole sequence.
Hero.
Yeah.
I'm holding out for a hero at the end of the night.
That's the one.
Yeah,
I'll send that to you. And I was like, this is, and that's what I saw. That's what spoiled it for me. So I hadn't actually watched the real scene, but I had seen the sort of the Bonnie Tyler version.
Okay.
But just quickly on Star Wars, I just reminded me of something, because today is the 1st of December that we're recording this. And so have you got an advent calendar, Luke?
Yes.
Yeah. What have you got on your advent calendar? Is it a chocolate one?
Well, things are so crazy. We've got two. We've got one which is just like little pictures behind doors. And then we've got another one which is like these little sort of pouches that hang from hooks. Okay. And because we're so disorganized, we haven't put anything in the pouches yet. So like to be honest, like last night, we're like, oh God, it's the 1st of December tomorrow. What are we going to put in the advent calendar? And it was just like, we'll find something. So that's another thing I'm going to do today is like, I buy some chocolate coins or something and put them in this.
Just put that in there. There's so many things that you forget. It's tough. But a friend of mine sent me a picture of his advent calendar, and it's a Star Wars advent calendar, and it says 12 pairs of socks. So I'm like, 12 pairs of socks? Are there any 12 days on the lunar cycle of Tatooine? What's going on there? And he said, no, there's 24 doors. I just get one sock a day.
Oh, that's great. I would love a calendar like that.
It sounds terrible. It's almost cruel. So he opens one sock. When am I going to get the matching sock? Is it going to be tomorrow? Is it going to be on the 23rd? When is it going to come?
Because he wants to be able to wear the socks immediately, but he's going to have to wait. And it's not necessarily one sock and then the left foot and then the right foot of that pair the next day. It's just random. So by the end of the month, he'll be able to actually wear the socks.
Okay. So,
are they Star Wars socks as well?
They are Star Wars socks. So he said, I think his wife got it for him. And he said, I didn't want to say anything in case she put me in a Vader death grip. So I was like, I find your lack of socks disturbing.
Okay. Well, on that note, it's probably a good time to stop because you've got a meeting now.
In the metaverse.
Is that your meeting now? I don't know.
You know, all of our meetings, all of our team meetings are in the metaverse. And the first couple, I was like, this is so, because like my boss is just flying around, you know, and then other people are doing other stuff, you know, but it's, you get used to it. And it actually, I don't know what it is, but it makes you much more focused on what you're doing. I don't know why. I'm still trying to understand the sort of the dynamics behind that, but there's something about having to focus, you know, because we'll sort of walk around these environments and talk about stuff as we go. So I'm kind of engaged in what I'm doing, and it helps you listen. And I think from a learning perspective, that really aids retention, that sort of learning by doing. So it works as well in the meeting environment. So, yeah.
Great. Well, it was really good to chat to you again. I hope the listeners have enjoyed listening to us talking, and all the best. And I look forward to doing a podcast with you in the metaverse at some point. That would be really cool.
Definitely. Thanks, everyone. Great to be back again.
Cheers. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
So that was Andy Johnson there, talking to me about the metaverse and The Mandalorian. Thanks again to Andy for taking part in this episode. It's always nice to have him on the podcast. Metaverse, Mandalorian, more M words. How many M words are there now in the Luke and Andy sort of parallel universe that we live in? How many M words did you count? So there's millennials, marathons, moving, Moby, metaverse, multiverse, metaphysical, Mandalorian, Marvel, and Matrix. It's like 10 M words. It's like Andy and I only exist in a parallel universe where everything begins with an M. There are probably more. So, you know, bonus points for any of you out there who can find any other significant M words in this conversation. Listeners, thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. You are the super duper super special extra special Lepsters who listen all the way through to the end to listen to me just sort of rambling like this at the end. It's always nice to have you with me. As I said at the beginning of the episode, this is probably going to be it for the podcast until the new year, until January, but we'll see. We will see. I did actually record something with Amber and Paul. So I've got an Amber and Paul episode in the pipeline. It's recorded. There's a video version of it and everything. It's not the Louvre episode, not the one where we went around the Louvre, but another one. But genuinely, if I could get that together and publish it, then I would. But literally, I've got so many time constraints now that I think that literally after I've stop recording this and put the episode together and stuff, after I've finished publishing this, I think I will be packing away everything. In fact, I've got to do that. I've got to start that this afternoon. Everything's got to get packed away. We've got a ridiculous time deadline in which we have to get everything packed and moved into the new flat before our tenancy period in this current flat finishes. So after a certain date, and it's very soon, basically our landlord might say, okay, right, out you go then. We need to get the flat ready to find new tenants in January. So we might have to leave. I mean, we will have to leave because we've agreed an end point for our rental here, for the renting of this apartment. So there's that. Also, we've got flights booked to go to England to be with my parents and my brother for Christmas. So there's that date as well. And also the other date, the other thing that needs to be ready is the other flat that we're moving into. It's got to be finished. All the work has to be finished. And I'll be honest, there are still quite a lot of things to be done. So it's all coming to a head, as they say. Anyway, this might be the last episode of the year because I'm going to pack all of this stuff away pretty much as soon as I've finished putting this episode together. So thank you for being with me throughout the year of 2021, the weird and wonderful year that it's been. the crazy year. Maybe more weird than wonderful. I don't know. I don't know how it's been for you. Probably a bit better than 2020, but who can say? In any case, we did it, right? We made it. We made it this far. So all we need to do is just keep calm and carry on. And let's just hope that 2022 is going to be a reasonable year. That's all we want, isn't it? I think so. But thanks for listening to my podcast this year. Whether you are a new listener, someone who's just discovered the podcast recently, or if you're a long-term listener or a mid-term listener or whoever you are, wherever you're from, whichever corner of Lepland you are from, thank you for listening and thank you for keeping the podcast alive in your own special way. And, you know, I will speak to you soon in some form. I mean, oh dear, I've got a premium episode I have to do. I've got to finish P33 and do some pronunciation drills. We will see. It might be a late night podcast, but I think you'll understand if that one doesn't arrive until January 2, not the 2nd of January. I just mean January as well. Okay, time to stop talking now. Merry Christmas, season's greetings, Happy New Year. I hope you have a good December and that you can have some nice, you know, nice family time or just some time off. I will speak to you very soon. Leave your comments in the comments section on the website, on YouTube. Although this, the stuff you're hearing me say now, this is not on YouTube. This is just for the audio people. So get in touch. Leave me a comment on the website. And all the very best for you for the festive period and best wishes for the new year. And I will speak to you very soon. Well, I say very soon, as soon as possible. But for now, it's just time to say ho, 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 Merry Christmas and goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.